Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Young people, go on and stand up real quick. Come on. Come on. Yeah, we gotta stand. Yo, everybody, come get your bounce on. Get your bounce on. Get your bounce on. Don't be cute with it. You gotta get. Come on. Fifth ward. Fourth ward. Come on. Sing it.
I never knew I could be so happy.
Think I wanna hit the horns.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the World According to Drew. I'm Andrew Wickham live from Studio A this morning. What a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. As always, read your African-American newspapers no matter where you are. We have a conglomerate of news resources led by the great Cheryl Smith. No excuse for the news. We have My Eye Messenger. We have the Garland Journal, and the Texas Metro News. No excuse whatsoever. So much is going on, so little time to talk about it. Hey, we got to get out here. We're getting some of that liquid sunshine here in Studio One here in Dallas. Actually was awakened by the thunder and lightning this morning, table with the heat wave and everything is going through. So much is going on. We want to get, you know what, I have a good friend that's on. I'm going to pull him on early and see what's going on. Mark, good morning. Let's see what's going on in your world this morning. Can you hear me, Mark? As we get things kind of fixed up a little bit, I want to play something else because we're having a few technical difficulties. Mark, you muted, so just say hello. We're having some technical difficulties with the weather here, so I want to make sure that you are with me this morning. So, again, so much is going on, so little time to talk about. We're going to talk about some of these deadly shootings. 4th of July is going to be a time of celebration, and we're getting all caught up in that of not being able to celebrate in peace. A lot of the shooting throughout this country, and we'll go, it's just unbelievable. Women traveling 8 hours for abortion, 2 planes. Come on, America. What happened to this blanket of love and harmony and charity, whatever the case may be? But we're falling down by the seams in America. I just can't believe what's going on with our country. And when we look at some of the shootings in Baltimore, Maryland, 30 people were shot, 2 of them dying. Kansas, 7 people shot. We're going to get it. Mark, are you here? We're having some technical difficulties on Mark's end this morning. So we'll try to get that fixed out a little bit. But, again, just so much is going on. I have to go back to one of my favorite songs this morning, What's Going On by Marvin Gaye, because that's where it's headed. What's going on?
They can save a world in despair. Who really cares?
It follows the water crisis in Flint that began 4 years ago when the city started drawing water from the Flint River, exposing thousands of people to the toxic metal.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, brother, brother.
25, it's going to be a black male in a white t-shirt.
There's far too many of you dying.
14 million more
you
Americans
know
would be uninsured next year. This deadly mass shooting
to bring
the
love here today. For only love is comforting. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and tears here today. Oh, pick it light and pick it fast. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh,
I tell you, a little bit of weather is taking us a long way this morning. But again, welcome to the World Quarter, Drew. We're going to work through these things this morning. Some of the things, again, that we're going to talk about, some of the rights that have been taken back with the Supreme Court. You talk about most recently affirmative action. And at what point do you realize you're voting against something that helped you get where you are? Is it to the point now where we want to be where we are but don't want anyone else to get there? That's something that we need to think about this morning. And for that being said, you know, like Marvin Gaye said, what's going on? Picket lines, everything you can think of. When Marvin talks about what's going on, he hit the nail on the head. And I'll recite that for you right quick. Mother, mother, there are too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's too many of you dying. You know, you got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, father, I mean, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, but only love can conquer hate. You know, you got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Marvin Gaye summed it up for us, and we still, at this point, on this day, the 9th day of July, 2023, we're going through things that we went through over 50 years ago. I told you, if I had the craftsmanship, I would definitely create any watch that runs backwards. And that's where America is going backwards. So some of those things we're going to discuss today, again, the shootings, your rights, you know, people having guns at 18, pushing to 21. I know some of the kids are going to have guns at 15, even younger. But why do that? They don't understand anything. They don't have the comprehension that's needed. However, whatever they're hearing is what they're portraying or what they're living out. So as parents, you have to be very careful of what you present to these kids. It is just unbelievable of the gun shootings that we have in this country. Why? But on a brighter note, let's bring in my main man all the way from Hotlanta, Mr. Eugene Gilbert. Good morning.
How you doing, Andrew?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Glad you could join me on this. We're getting liquid sunshine here in Dallas this morning. Looking out the studio this morning, seeing a beautiful cardinal bird. Hadn't seen one like that in a while, up in the trees. And I guess we're washing all the pollution that Dallas can create to the ground. I tell you what got me up this morning was the hard weather, and I knew I had the sprinklers was about to go off. Man, I jumped up, ran in the garage, and turned the sprinklers off this morning. So no need of watering with God trying to water it.
What's going on in
your life, man? What's going on? What you got to tell the world about this morning?
Well, first of all, you made a comment about seeing a bird. Like I tell you, I've been to Dallas many times, and I've yet to see a bird flying around.
Well, it depends on what neighborhood. Because sometimes a bird could be food. You know what I'm saying? If it's too close to the ground, the cats don't get them. But out in the city a little bit, you see. Yeah, but there are birds, some beautiful birds. Because, you know, we had that ecosystem going on where, you know, birds get the worms. They're dropping to fertilize. Everything is going as God's plan with these birds and just evolution itself. So, yeah, we do have birds. We got a lot of them. But I'm willing to bet a bird from Oak Cliff might take on a bird from Frisco and take care of business.
I don't know. I say William Chippen got all of them.
Yeah, all of them that say cock-a-doodle-doo, man. If we're getting something else, pigeon and stuff, then I might have to find somebody else. Yeah, but Hiawatha Williams has been doing that for many years. And it's funny that you mentioned he has put his place in strategic positions throughout the city.
He has.
And his marketing plan is very simple. Give them what they want. as far as chicken, and he's buying up places that were previous restaurants, previous McDonald's, previous Wiener Schnitzel or whatever that company, and it's working pretty good. He has one in Prairie View, and that makes sense to have a chicken spot near a college campus. In Dallas, as I mentioned, he will take these restaurants that are folded, and he'll buy the building and put his famous, yellow and orange together. Don't ask me. It works. Brown, he makes it work. You definitely know you're at Williams when you see him. And people, the one near me, actually, Asians have bought the franchise from him. And would he have events? And that's something I know you're going to be talking about a little bit later. But they have ticket sales actually in Williams Chicken during the football games. So those who live not close to the facility are able to get tickets. And I'm talking about they are readily available in the suburbs. But the bulk of our people do live from downtown south.
So, right, right. Well, I think Hiawatha's a great guy, and he's somebody we should all learn from. I love his story and what he does as an entrepreneur and how he has helped his community so much. And going back to what you said earlier in regards to affirmative action being taken off the table, it's going to force us as black people to do more for ourselves. And we need more people like Hiawatha Williams because he's an awesome individual. I've always admired him, the fact that he came from that corporate world, took that knowledge, and created his franchise, and he's doing great things with it. And I think we all need to consider what we can do for our community. How can we create jobs to help people who look like us, just like other ethnicities? So in light of Clarence Thomas and his decision to eliminate affirmative action, we got to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, and Williams Chicken is a great example for us all. He really is.
Right. Now, you mentioned Clarence Thomas when we talk about that. You know, it was mere, I don't know. I get upset because we forget how old folks used to say. We forget from whence we come. When you couldn't get into Yale, or you couldn't get into Harvard, and they had to go by, let's get one or two so we can fulfill this country's letter, so to speak, of having at least one or two blacks in there. And now that you've arrived and you sit on the highest court, you know, you've forgotten from whence you've come, like old folks used to say, from whence you come. And it really hurts because now I think how schools are going to work around it, Gene, they're going to look at zip codes. And they're going to find out that the zip codes are changing. You look at Tampa, the 33607 was black and Cuban. Now it's starting to get white because they realize the value of the properties in that particular area. And so they may get one or two, but they're going by zip codes. But how many? You know, how many are going to be left out because of affirmative action is no longer in place?
Well, I think with Clarence Thomas and we got to look at these Republicans. We might have some Republicans on this line, so no offense to anybody, but my opinion about it is Clarence Thomas, Tim Scott, you can go down the line with them, even with the female. What's her name? Blexit. What's her name? Candace Owens. You know what they all have in common? And this might shake it up a little bit, but do you know what they all have in common?
What is that?
They married to Europeans. They married to white people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Republicans, and I know this sounds crazy. Larry Elder, who I'm looking at on TV right now, Juan Williams and Larry Elder, they all married to white people. And sometimes you take on the persona of your spouse. But that's the interesting thing about Republicans. I tell people Republicans are the party of white males, those who love white males, and those who want favor from white males. I don't understand how a black person, African-American, can call themselves a conservative, because what are you conserving? White people conserve their wealth, their land, their jobs. So for Clarence Thomas to do what he did, and Juan Williams and Larry Elder and Tim Scott and all of these Republicans, they're just pawning the game to convince and show, see, we got somebody black. Look at what they're doing. But we're in a difficult space. It's just like Reconstruction when they set the enslaved free. We had Barack Obama. After Lincoln, we had one of the Andrews. And what did they do? They enacted laws to put us right back in the place to where we can thrive as a people. And that's what we see going on right now. This country has always looked out for European immigrants, given billions of acres of land, billions of dollars. They've always done for them. And we had an opportunity with affirmative action and some other programs to thrive, and we did. And now they're taking it off the table. They're taking it off the table, and it's going to force us as a people, communities, create businesses, create covenants amongst ourselves to protect the real estate so that we can make improvements upon that land to create economic opportunities for each other. That's what it is.
And let me add this. When you think of affirmative action, you think about if you look at a good definition here, I found here, affirmative action in the United States consists. This is what it did when it was on the table. This is a government-mandated, government-approved, and voluntary private programs granting special consideration to historically excluded groups, specifically racial minorities and women. These
and women part got to go.
But this,
that's got to go because it means white female. That's what hurt it right there.
Let's look at the order. I had to catch myself because for years I kept saying one thing, and when you get with Rudy Daniels at Florida A&M in economics, and Attorney Williams, they changed your thought process. Because think about it, when we came from Tampa, we thought everything was good. We got along with the Cubans. We knew if you were over by Plant High School, it was a different type of environment. And I'm talking on Dale Mabry, south of Lois, got confused. That was Plant District. So that was the high cotton mark or the high water mark in Tampa, High Park, Palmacia, all of that at one particular time. And, you know, some of our grandmothers and neighbors worked for the people that lived on the other side of Lois Avenue over in Palmacia. And it was no way of me getting around it because my grandmother worked for a very rich family that owned a wine and spirit company. And they were good to my grandmother. She raised the kids. And let me tell you, Gene, when my grandmother passed, you didn't know who her grandkids or who her kids were because the white kids were crying more than us.
Wow.
That she helped raise.
Sure.
You know, we look at that movie, The Help, and see how Octavia's role took care of those kids. Well, I had my own Octavia Smith in my life, my grandmother.
Wow. Wow, that's great.
And she never bought a car. Because they always gave her a car to make sure she could get where she was going. Yeah, the family used to come pick her up sometimes. I remember that as a young lad. Not a young boy, as a young lad. And we just kind of watched, and they were always nice. And what we were hearing, now I want to thank my parents in heaven and my grandparents. There were a lot of things going on in Tampa, and I was very naive to a lot of those things, Eugene. Because my grandfather had a business. He worked for a furniture company, office furniture, And like any good black man during them days, you work out the front door and the back door. You understand what I'm saying?
I got it exactly. I think that's very great. Good of him.
He worked out both sides of the store. So he had a little money. We were fortunate to have a little bit. And then when they moved out to Carver City, in Lincoln Gardens in that particular time, it was for old black GI soldiers, people that they felt a little sorry for. Let's give them this swamp-infested land. Alligators, snakes, whatever was out there west of Del Mabry. Let's give it to them. Nobody wanted. They put an airport out there. Now,
that's
I don't know if you
family
remember.
Had land. That's what my family had
remember.
Land.
Yeah. Then they put
by
them
the
out
airport,
there.
My uncle did.
Yes. And that was all the way from Hillsborough Avenue down was considered swamp. But
right.
Columbus Drive was our cutoff. From Columbus Drive all the way back, you found there was a lot of blacks that lived in that area. And with that being said, that area now per capita is one of the richest areas. Basically, you have the airport out there. You have two major malls out there. You have Tampa Stadium or Raymond James. Plus the airport, they are just reaping trying to go out there. When I go in my old neighborhood, we never had no white folks out there riding bicycles. I go now, they buying up, giving us pennies.
Everything.
Pennies
yep.
for our parents' homes. That's why
yep.
I'm hanging on. Pennies, and then turn around, pay you $80,000, and you're like, oh, my God, I got $80,000. But they turn around and sell it for $250.
Yep.
Why not
That's
get $150 if you wanted that much? Negotiate. Don't be quick to pull the trigger. And you have to tell, we have to learn, just don't get, if they want it that bad, they'll be willing to pay what's needed. And we don't
let me
want to quit.
Let
we
me,
want
let
to
me interject
quit.
Something.
Go ahead.
Let me interject. Usually, when you look at gentrification, when you look at, you go back generationally and you look at how they created suburbs, when you look at how they created different communities, here's the biggest difference. We fight as individuals. At the front line, in the trenches, are real estate agents. They're real estate agents. They work together. They move as a group to buy communities. Here where I live in Atlanta, I'm convinced that they got two prices. One, they tell the public, oh, that's $1 million. And then when the gay guy come or when the white family come, they got creative financing for them. But their real estate agents work on, and their brokers work on their behalf for their community. We don't see the same on our side of the fence. Our real estate agents working for a dollar. There ain't no covenants. There ain't no organization determining how we're going to move and sell our properties and things. No, we left to the wolves. We left to the wolves. And that, again, it goes back mm-hmm. to affirmative action. It goes back to how we move as a group, how we practice our collectivism and our exceptionalism. Hard to beat a team. Hard to beat a team, and that's what you're up against. I remember I was producing an event in Tampa in 2016, so I was down there for about 2 months. I was producing the Universal Circus, and I was staying at that, I think it's Courtyard Marriott over there in West Tampa. But I would go to the park, the new park, Perry Harvey Park, and I would go jogging early in the morning. So I would have to go through West Tampa. I didn't want to get on the interstate. And as I was going through West Tampa, I haven't lived in Tampa really since I graduated from high school. But I remember when that area over by Riverfront Park and that area was predominantly black or Hispanic, which it had been for decades, right? So I'm rolling through, and they call it South Tampa or some Soho or something like that. And I look at all the houses, the infill houses, all the condos, and it ain't us.
No, it's not us at all.
So I'm rolling through there one morning, and I see this truck, a white truck, and it had something development on it, right? And I would see this truck pretty much every morning. Then I noticed they following me. They following me, right? So I'm riding one morning. I said, I'm going to say something. And I pulled up, and he pulled up next to me. I let down my window, and he rolled down this one. I said, hey, man, what's going on? Why are you following me every morning? He just took off, took off. But that was a development group that they have that knows everything that goes on in that community, every house. And here in Atlanta, off of, I want to say, one of our major black avenues, not MLK, but it's a major, it's in the West End area, which is over by the AUC and all of that area. So that area is being regentrified. So if you go down the main thoroughfare, you see the black folk, you see the businesses, you see all of that. But if you turn off into the community, the houses, they're just off the chain. They got their own little restaurants and bars and all of those things back there. Mm. Then there's a house with development authority on it. And ain't nobody who look like me and you going in that house. And they know this community. They know everything about that community. They know the homeless guy coming down the street. And they're going to get rid of him. They know Miss Bertha is 92 and she got to do something with that house. They ain't got no kids. They just waiting that out. And that's, we are fighting a very organized group. And they're getting us because they're organized. They have a 20-year plan that they're executing. And we're clueless because we move as individuals. Our communities are not communities. They're neighborhoods. And what's going on in Carver City, I went over there too. I have friends, you and other friends that grew up over there, some relatives that lived over there off of Glory, I think it is, Glory. And they're all going through it. And I remember going over there as a little kid. It was a black community. And it's changing because we are not moving as a team. We're not practicing our collectivism, and we're not practicing our exceptionalism. And chances are, what's going on here, and this is going on everywhere. I travel all over the country, right?
Yeah, it's everywhere.
And I see gentrification everywhere. But I seen one city that was fighting it, and that is Kansas City. I was there producing an event. I was there for about 3 months. And they, in areas where Satchel Paige and all those Buck and all those great baseball players and entertainers live, they had some really nice homes. Really nice homes. I mean, beautiful homes, many mansions. And now they're being gentrified, right? Well, the government is stepping in. Organizations are saying, what can we do to fight this? I went to a community meeting, and they were trying to devise ways to stop gentrification from just taking their neighborhood. And that's the only place that I've been in. I mean, I've been to many cities. And we just accept it. They're pushing us out to the suburbs. Here, where I live, Atlanta, you know, we do have a black mayor, black government, but the economic structure is not us. And everywhere you look, I call it, I see cranes. When you see those cranes, you know, the cranes that lift stuff, that's when it's going down. And you see cranes everywhere around here, and they're building condos, apartments, left and right, they're pushing black folk out to the south suburbs. We even have mayors in cities that we never had mayors in, McDonough and South Atlanta, those areas, and out east to Conyers. That's what they're pushing everybody.
We're pushing out the core of the city because they know the central business district is everything. Same thing in Dallas. They put the condos up, and they don't know it's a glorified project, what it is. They'll say a condo. The names have changed, but the game is still the same. You understand what I'm saying? My dad used to say this, and I thought it was – my dad was born in Georgia, but grew up in Tampa. And he thought –
where was he born in Georgia?
In Baybridge, Georgia.
Okay. A lot of great folk come from the GA.
And when he moved to Tampa – they had a wood frame house, and he thought that the projects was the best thing they had going because it was concrete. See what I'm saying? It was concrete. They didn't have anybody running up under the house or what. It was sturdy, especially with hurricanes and stuff. They didn't have to worry about houses falling off the bricks. And we've seen that. And then he said he couldn't wait until he got a job. When the fam got a job with the electric company, Tampa Electric, and was pretty pioneer. And, you know, Gene, what was that? We talked about Black history. My dad said they were talking about LBJ, or talking with him in the early 60s, trying to fix the problem that Tampa Electric had with Black engineers and Black workers. They weren't allowing them to do things there at Tampa Electric. So LBJ was very instrumental in helping them. Unfortunately, with the death of President Kennedy, he had to stop talking with them, and things went back. But I can tell you this, the man I grew up admiring, being my father, some of the things that he had to go through out at TECO, people tried to sabotage, could have killed everybody at the plant out at Gannon Station. You know, all the power plants down there with the water down going, Big Bend, what is that, US 41, down 41 or 301. Right. And the guy so busy trying to sabotage my dad, they fired the guy. He was one of the first white guys fired because he didn't cool the valve off. The valve is ash gray, meaning it's hot, and it could have exploded and killed a lot of people. Trying to sabotage what my dad was doing. Now, that's just my story. But how many other stories were out there? And then when he moved up, and, you know, we thought we were the Jeffersons, moving on up, you know, but he went through hell, and he told you. He said, the reason I do what I do is to make sure that you all don't have to fight like I've had to fight. And still, we're fighting in 2023. Affirmative action has been turned away. If it wasn't for affirmative action, a lot of people would not have gotten what they've received. And that's from a positive note. And now it's turned back. You mentioned some key players earlier. Tim Scott, Candace Owens, Juan Williams. What's the connection with all of them?
Let they married to somebody white.
Yeah.
I got you. They married. I'm just going to say it. I don't care if nobody get mad. They married to somebody white. Once you go white, you don't want to go back because you got a life of privilege.
Right.
And
you're free
stuff.
To marry whoever you want. That's understandable. But when you're preaching blackness, it's kind of hard for me to get that one.
Hard for me
to get that one when you're preaching blackness. And when you look at somebody, and now you're free to love who you want. But when you're out there like that, it's hard. It's a big appeal for me to swallow. I'll put it like that.
I don't know.
One of the ones you're going to sit in water, let it dissolve a little bit before you try to take it.
I don't know, because Andrew.
I don't know if you want to take it.
I don't know, Andrew. I think you need to consider who you marry and what that going to mean to your family. I'm sure your mother said, hey, you can love who you want to, but you better marry somebody that can use this comb. And you listen to her. That ain't changed.
Yeah.
We're in an interracial relationship.
If you can't use your comb, don't bring her home.
That's right.
We heard that. There's a lot of them.
Interrelationships are hard. They're very hard, okay, because you got to deal with it, but it does make a difference. You got to consider your community and what that's going to mean. You know, you can love what you want to, and then having kids sometimes, when I lived in Chicago, my next-door neighbors, they were mixed. And man, oh man, and I've known mixed people, and I don't mean nothing by this or nothing like that, but this is one mixed people that had some, because they didn't know if they were black or white. They really didn't. And I'm like, hey, man, you black? No, I'm not. No, I'm not. When I'm in the city in Chicago on the south side, they call me white. And then when we move to the suburbs in Schaumburg, they call me a nigger. I say, man, don't you know the rule? You got 1/16, drop, you black. You don't understand. That's what he was saying to me, him and his sister. I said, hey, you black. Mm-hmm. You just got a little more challenges than everybody else. But We need to consider what our community is and how we move forward. That's just my personal opinion. You can love who you want to and all of that. But we really need to, in these difficult times with a clock being rolled back, consider who we are as a people and how we move and everybody being on that page. Mm-hmm. You know, they unite. They unite with who they are based upon a cultural group, whether they're Jewish, whether they're ethnicity, whether they're white. And we sometimes, just like when we get a black mayor or a black leader, a politician, they want to be everybody's president. They want to be everybody's mayor. They want to be everybody's governor, everybody's representative. No, you need to play on your team and play with your constituency so that they can move forward. So, no.
Right. Well, we want to be transparent. Transparent.
Right.
Be able to see across the rainbow. But when the rubber meets the road, they're going to call him, call her, what they are in their eyes. You know, their smile, whoever made the song, they backstabbers, smile in your face all the time. They want to take your place. You know, I mean, can you imagine the music that we heard growing up, how relevant it was for that particular day, how relevant it is today on things. You look at Marvin Gaye, I opened up with that. What's going on? You know, you're talking about picket lines. Same thing.
It is.
It's a travesty.
Where's the social commentary? Where's the social commentary and music coming from this generation? Where is that music? We know what that music meant to us growing up in the 70s and the 80s, how music really played a vital part of our lives because it taught us how to deal with that, how to approach a female, or how to stand up for your rights, or how to deal with that backstabber. What does this music today teach youth? Well, see, again, it goes back to the fact that we don't own nothing. We don't own nothing that come in our ears,
mm-hmm.
our eyes, and we get a constant barrage of vomit, a shit, is what we're getting. And I think it contributes to the detriment of who we are because you think music is music? Man, we're programmed through media. And what's going on? Program that generation. I'm Black and Proud, program that generation.
Mm-hmm.
Any love song taught us how to deal with that female or how to pursue that female. Or when that song came on, that record did the talking because we were caught up in another emotion. But where is that social commentary that teaches us as a culture how to relate? Where is it at?
Yeah. Right.
Where is it at? Where mm-hmm. we getting that from? Sweetie, are we getting that from what's the big girl name? What's her name? You know what
Megan.
Nah, well, no, the other well Megan, all right, but no, nah, not to say she's not all right, but you know she
Cardi,
played a
Cardi, movie. Cardi.
No, that's not Cardi. You don't know your rap, Drew. You know what I'm talking about. She plays the flute, and she could sing, and she got some good music too. I ain't taking nothing away from her.
Something with an L. I know who you're talking about. It comes to my head. And those who are listening, press one and help us out with this. I know who you're talking about.
What is her name? Played a flute, and she can sing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get it. Just keep talking. I'm looking.
But she's a good artist. But beyond, I would say, there's very few of that caliber that have that talent, but where is that social commentary? And we don't have it because we've let other ethnic groups and other cultural groups usurp
Lizzo,
that's the name, yeah. We've let other ethnic groups usurp our business. And what convinces people is their past, their history. It is, and we can look back at rap music, we can look back at gangster rap. We can look back at just rap right now, 50 years of mm-hmm. hip-hop. We don't have no love songs that teach us how to get together. We don't have no social commentary that say fight the power. All we got is vomit or shenanigans. That's all we got. And you got to ask yourself, is this who we are as a people? No, it's not who we are as a people. It's what they allow us to hear. It's what they allow us to see. And that's why we love what Cheryl and what you guys are doing with media, because that we need to push our narrative. We need to push our narrative. All this stuff goes back to the same thing. We're not standing up. We're not standing up. And we got, you talk about gun control. Well, listen to the music. Watch the videos. You know, so I don't know, man. It's just here in Atlanta, there's shootings every damn day almost. Somebody getting shot. I was going to the gas station when they allowed everybody to have guns. I seen this little brother. He looked like he was maybe in his late teens or 20s. And I'm parked at BP, right? And I get through pumping my gas. And I just happen to look over my shoulder. He has a gun in his hand, walking, right? Walking to pay for his gas. I don't know. I got in my car. And I said, I'm about to just, you know, I was going to pull off. And I said, let me just see what's going on. And he walked in the gas station, which you can do. Gun. Got what he wants.
Well,
came back out.
See,
he had his gun.
But see, I think it's a justification of saying that we don't have to kill them. They're going to kill themselves. Let's legalize it. You know, I look out here in Texas, might be a little different. It could be the same in Georgia, especially in the southern half of Georgia. You can't take an AR-15 and go hunting with it. What you going to bring back? The way that gun destroys, Bambi is going to be already chopped Bambi when you pick it up. All right? Anything else is going to go through. So to tell me that you need these AR-15s, you know, and I'm a proponent of pushing the age limit for buying guns up to 21. If you can do it for liquor, you can do it for everything else. Why not do it for guns? These little young kids in high school don't need to have these guns. Or in college, you know, you're seeing a widespread of shootings again. Because when we were coming up, you had things going on in Gainesville, things going on in Tallahassee. University of Texas had somebody shooting from the tower. So this is nothing new for college campuses. But the thing is, the gun control, and then we have people sitting on high courts, and we mentioned them earlier. They're not thinking. They couldn't think, well, Big Mama may have had that gun next to the Bible.
Right.
You grew up
yes,
like I
did.
You knew it was close.
Well,
I didn't know what
message. Let's go back to the root. One way to look at it is like what you're saying, and I agree, but there are people fighting for this republic. Affirmative action plan for European males when they created this country is the Constitution. That's their affirmative action plan. It gave them the right to come and do whatever they wanted to do in this country. Now we're at a point we've had a black president, and people are standing up. Other ethnic groups are standing up. You got other countries all around the world asserting themselves, and there are people fighting. Donald Trump wants to make America great again. Well, what does that mean? And when has it been great for black folk as a whole? Never. Never. But for them, they knew when it was great, when they had their way, when they could kill you and nobody wouldn't say anything. They can take your house, take your land. They could have their way. So here it is now. Here in Georgia, anybody can get a gun. It ain't, it's, yeah, guns for us, but they're armed to the teeth. They are armed to the teeth. Some same mills that Bill of Rights for, that Constitution, their affirmative action plan and all the things that have been done for them, they're getting ready. And I'm not like a conspiracy guy, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. They want to conserve their republic. That's what this country is. They set up a corporation republic on land and create this myth about we all slave descended when we're not. And now they got to fight for their land. And they're going to do that. They're training. They got militias. They're training.
Oh, yeah.
They're getting
ready. But you know what they fail to realize, Eugene? They fail to realize their whole scope since we came over in the 1700s, 1763. Jamestown, Virginia. Now, that's what they put on paper. You and I were taught that St. Augustine, right. Florida was the oldest city, but that's okay.
Right.
So it's just everybody claiming, everybody on the East Coast can say that that's where they stopped first. That I do understand. But it's such a focus on the tanned ones, being us, that these other people are coming in, they're buying up everything, brothers and sisters coming over from India, and most of them not broke either. They buy enough stuff. They can buy their own little area. There's a place in Dallas called Fun Asia. F-U-N Asia. They do their own grocery shopping over there. They bring their things in. You know, every time we try to get a supermarket, and Hiawatha had a supermarket, very nice supermarket over the cliff, and everybody complained that its prices were higher. Well, of course, an individual store owner cannot get the prices that a franchise can get because of the volume. He can't buy too much because spoilage, all of that. But if we patronize, maybe he can get another store and bring prices down. We don't think like that. We'd rather go over to a store where they watching you. Or how about this? I'm going to make it real clear. When you go in a little store, you smell an incense. They have broken. This one place I go, they have the, what do you call it, slot machines in it. And slots not even legal in Dallas. Well, we have the glass broken on it. All right, so, you know, I get in and get out when I go over there. But you never know. And the way people are curving this democracy, and it's not helping any when you mention those names of those who are in the Republican Party. You're free to use any political party that you want. But I do have problems, as we mentioned earlier. If you're pro-black, who you have on your shoulder, come on, work with me. I'm just calling it like I see it. And I'll say my disclaimer, my views are not the views of this station or any publication associated with them. It's my feeling. We've been pushed to the back. And another thing I get upset with, Gene, we couldn't get in the front of the bus. And Rosa fought for a seat in the front. Now we driving the bus, and guess where the kid's sitting?
In the back
of the bus.
Let me ask you this. Y'all got Supermancados out there. That's what I call them, Supermancados. That's the Mexicans that are in the black community. Supermancados, the grocery store?
Yes.
Okay, I just see Supermancado, and I know, but they got a chain in the black community because I dealt with them. But I tell you, when it comes to Indians and Asians and things, I had a product that I sold, as you know, a male enhancement product that I sold in all over the South. And the way that I got my product in all these convenience stores all over the South, pretty much every state in the South, was through the Indians. The Indians, and then there was a major distributor who picked up my product. And I tell you, when you deal with these other ethnic groups, their best come over here. They come over here, their best come over here, and they work together to get behind each other and support each other. And they let me in. I didn't know how to get a product in a convenience store. They see me walking to this gas station every day trying to get them to buy my product. And this Indian said, "Brother, you need to go to the trade show." I'm like, "What trade show?" And he told me what the trade show was, and it was right here. It was in Macon. Went down there, and I sold a ton of product. I pretty much made my money back in one day. And was able to put my product everywhere, all across the South. But they best come over here. They work together. And that's how they move. We, as quote-unquote Americans, we bought into the system, and we don't see ourselves the way that we should since integration, I should say. And that's the challenge right there, is to not move as an individual but move as a team. And when I was out there in Dallas, I think it's Telemundo.
Yeah.
Telemundo, yeah. That's the TV station. I bought a lot of ads with them. They offered me a job. I didn't even speak no Spanish. But they seen how I was moving. I dealt a lot with the Mexican community and things of that nature, and was able to get a lot of stuff done. And they, again, they know their demographics, they know their power, and they support each other. And with Huerta and his grocery store, you know, that's true what you're saying, but we just got to find a way. And even though this affirmative action has been dialed by taking off the table, I think this may be the spark to ignite the flame for us to start looking at ourselves in a different way, being job creators instead of job takers,
right.
Creating opportunities, a job maker instead of a job taker. Right now, we all going to schools. You go to FAMU, go to one of the best programs in the country back in the day, SBI, and they teach you to go work for somebody else, but they don't teach you how to work for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there are not many HBCUs that even have entrepreneur programs. And when it comes to the bus, Dr. Claude Anderson, you heard of Dr. Claude Anderson?
Yes, sir.
Well, Dr. Claude Anderson, what he said, instead of riding on the bus, own the bus company. And they did. His family did, and other families did. And that's what we got to think of things. We're fighting for integration. We don't see no other ethnic group, for the most part, fighting for integration. And every law that has been amended or changed with the Constitution has been specifically for black people, not LGBTQ or whatever it is. I don't even know them letters, but not them, but for black people. Black people. That's what they amended the Constitution for. 13, 14, 15, the different amendments was specifically for people who look like me and you. Nobody else, not the Asians,
and
not the Indians.
We haven't taken advantage of it like we could have when it comes to those amendments. We look at Juneteenth right here in Texas where it really started.
When we excel, everybody talk about Black Wall Street, Tulsa, Oklahoma, but there have been many communities where black folk have excelled, and they come and they just crush our community.
Right.
Crush them.
And let me give you an example.
Tampa, all throughout Florida.
Let me give you a good example. I uncle by marriage, been knowing him more than not knowing him in my life. We were talking last week, and we were talking about the, just the suffering of people from Birmingham, Alabama. There was a little town, you always hear about Tulsa, the independent financial independence they had. You talk about Rosewood down in Florida. You talk about there's a town called Chubb, Georgia, that had independence. Well, folks, for your historians, I want you to look up Roosevelt City in Birmingham, outside of Birmingham, Alabama. Roosevelt City. And you'll see they had their own mayor. They had their own police force, fire department, right there where George Wallace stood up. Segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. That was his stance. When that bullet hit him, he changed his mind. He changed his theories. And people don't know this, that his niece ended up marrying a black mayor, understand what I'm saying, George Wallace, who talked about segregism. I'm putting words together this morning. He talked about that so much, his niece married the black mayor of Tuskegee, Johnny Ford. Long time mayor of Tuskegee. Now, I don't know if that bullet brought him back or what, but why should it have to be that? Why do we have to go to great lengths to get people to see all the colors of the rainbow?
I tell you, they've always destroyed our communities. They really have. If you look at the Red Summer after World War I, what did they do? They came in and they destroyed our communities. And this happens time and time again, every city, every state where you got black folk, you're going to see a riot. You're going to see where they came in under some supposed lie. He whistled at a white woman or he raped a white woman. and they come in and they destroy your businesses. They destroy your communities by design. It wasn't just Tulsa. Okay, and if they didn't destroy it by force that way, then they came up with all these urban renewal laws and driving highways through every black community in the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
Every black community, Liberty City, Central Tampa, you name it.
Well, you name it. And let me add this to it. And, folks, most of us were not born when this was going on. They started this in the 50s. Started out with the Eisenhower. Look at your history. That interstate I-20, I-35, I-45, all that was under the Eisenhower administration. Where they started putting, like Eugene mentioned, these interstate highways. And even if you look today, these same interstate systems are in place. We tried to, when we got the Martin Luther King pass, where you can put name a street, we asked that every street that had Martin Luther King on cross a major highway. I think it's two or three cities that may not have it, but let's look at Dallas. If you go across 45 and 175, which is a state highway, where's Martin Luther King? Right there, right in the neighborhood. But however, it could have signage. That's the word they use. They wanted to have signage for all these areas. And every Martin Luther King, for the most part, throughout this country, have signs. Gene, where we lived in Tampa, they changed Buffalo.
Yep, Buffalo.
And Buffalo crosses 275 now. It used to be 75. And they had signage. The white patrons, folks, I'm telling you, the white patrons, not just in Tampa, Florida, they were fighting it. And then if you know Tampa, you have an Italian group, people from Europe that have moved there. I'll put it like that. They were fighting. We don't want to change the name of the stadium or the street. We don't want this. We have to buy too much new stationery. When Toba, Tampa, black businesses or whatever, they said, don't worry about it. When they change the name, we'll buy your stationery. We'll help you transition over. So that was a hell of a fight to change Buffalo into Dr. Martin Luther King. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they wanted to say that they were on Hines Boulevard. They didn't want to put on Martin Luther King. And I'm going to look it up here to see which address they're using. We had a black, well, I call it black mall. We had East Lake Mall and you had Tampa Bay Center.
When we Bernice King, he says, why is every MLK street located in impoverished areas? And for some people, those areas signify to them where to stay away from. Where to stay away from. And as you travel around the country, it's a fact. And naming the street, I say we need to make an investment. We need to hold this country accountable. We don't need to act for civil rights. We need money. We need reparations. We need economics. That's what we need. That's just putting lipstick on a pig, although it's an important pig. Where is the accountability with the economics? We don't ask for things as a people. We'd be happy because somebody got a job. They the first this, or you put person over that administration when – we need to hold the feet to the fire to say we want things that are going to make economic change in our community. You know, they don't want to – not only do they not want to have MLK, hell, we got Confederate – you coming to Georgia or Alabama, think about all of these high schools that are named after Confederate generals.
Mm-hmm.
Confederate generals. I was in Montgomery, Alabama at one of those high schools, and it was named after Robert E. Lee. And it was a black high school packed with black folk, not one white person in the whole building, right? And I was like, how can you go to a high school, Robert E. Lee Generals? Oh, that's just the way it is. It's always been that. I said, but this is named after a Confederate general.
And what city was it?
This is Montgomery.
think it's Montgomery.
Huh? Well, they're saying to be saying for Jacksonville, Robert E. Lee. For Jacksonville.
Well,
and then let me add this.
Houston.
Yeah. Oh.
His whole city of Houston.
Oh, yeah. Yates. Everybody. Yates, you know, is a black school. Carter High School was named after David W. Carter, who was a white physician here in Dallas. James Madison, Abe Lincoln. You know, I'm just call and roll right here in Dallas of our schools. We have one Barack Obama that's doing extremely well here in Dallas. You know, and the kids that qualify as a high-tech school, they're still sending the kids to private school because they don't want them to tag on to it. But Gene, hold those thoughts, because for those who are listening, welcome to the world according to Drew. I'm Andrew Wiggum live from Studio A this morning on this beautiful, beautiful ninth day of July. We're celebrating earlier in the week the 4th of July. And I tell you, time flies. When you get older, a year could go by so fast. Christmas never came fast enough when you were a kid. But so much is going on. A beautiful day, overcast day in Dallas. We probably was awakened by the rain and a few thunder booms this morning got me up a little early. But we thank you so much for just being a part of the world according to Drew. Now, Gene, at this time, just hang in there. I want to bring in my favorite doctor. Let me see, she's on here. Go ahead and press one for me, doctor. Make sure I got your number, but I always want to make sure I got it right. Okay. All right. Dr. Rodriguez, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, all right. I call you the mute queen, because you got it. Good, good. What you got for us today? Folks, we try to bring in some, just an expert. I call him my expert that I always rely on of different things that we can use. Let me put this disclaimer out before we start. Now, folks, I want you to go to your doctor. Don't take our word because I don't want something to be wrong. And you want to blame me or blame me. You'll never blame Dr. Rodriguez. But we're looking for some alternatives some additives that may help some of your situations and natural additives that may help some things going on. So, Dr. Rodriguez, what do you have for us this morning?
Okay. This morning I got the other fruits that I didn't have time for last weekend.
All right, go ahead. What you got for us?
The first one is oranges.
Okay.
I'm sure everybody this morning has some oranges in their cupboard someplace.
Mm-hmm. In the jar.
Okay.
Orange juice.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Okay. With oranges, the most important thing about oranges is vitamin C. Now, oranges have other nutrients that keep your body healthy. There's fiber in oranges that keep your blood sugar levels in check and reduce high cholesterol. And reducing high cholesterol prevents cardiovascular disease. And then calcium also, oranges also contain 55 milligrams of calcium, and that's like 6% of your daily requirement. And like for males or females, one orange can contain up to 92% of your daily vitamin C recommendation. It depends on the variety. I'm sure Florida oranges have that 92%. Vitamin C is responsible for keeping your skin youthful, and it does this by helping the body regenerate collagen. And, you know, collagen is the protein found in your skin, your bones, and your cell. Vitamin C boosts the production of hyaluronic acid. Hyaluronic acid, and that helps our body produce that collagen. Because our body produces less collagen as we age, we need to eat foods like oranges to keep your skin healthy. They'll keep your skin healthy for years to come. Another benefit of the vitamin C is that it can help boost immunity, can boost potassium intake by up to 14%. Now, potassium is important because it can help relax and open the body's blood vessels, and that helps prevent high blood pressure. One cup of oranges contains 4 grams of fiber, and because it's recommended that you get at least 14 grams of fiber for every 1,000 calories that you eat. Because fiber helps you digest, process food, and keep a healthy weight. And half of the fiber contained in an orange is soluble fiber. Soluble fiber creates a kind of gel substance that slows your digestion. And it also helps to absorb nutrients and decreases the amount of sugar your body absorbs. And this, in turn, lowers your blood sugar level. So for high blood pressure and high blood sugar, orange is very good. And, like, if you're like some of the people that like what they call the orange zest, which is the orange peel, it's got hesperidin in it, in the peel. And that's a flavonoid. It gives it its color. And those flavonoids have lots of antioxidant properties that are unique just to citrus fruit. And now, one benefit of the hesperidin is that it can improve your cognitive function. It's been proven that citrate, and that's a compound of citric acid found in fruits like oranges, can help reduce your chances of getting kidney stones. That citrate helps prevent the crystallizations of salts that cause kidney stones. Another benefit of the citrate is that it has the ability to lower the pH in your urine tract and will help fluid pass easier through the excretory system. It also has, the orange has many vitamins and nutrients that are good for your health. Besides vitamin C, you also have, it has that. And then it also has potassium. It also has folate, and that's, we call it B9. It's for helpful for helping our cells grow and plays a role in your DNA formation. It's real important for pregnant women to consume because a lack of it can cause birth defects. The orange also has thiamine in it, and that's B1. It's water-soluble, and it can be found in every cell in the body. Thiamine helps our body process carbohydrates, fats, and proteins from the food that we eat.
Okay.
And that's the orange.
All right. And, you know, growing up in Florida, I guess we were in good shape because with oranges, let me give you a black perspective of oranges in Florida. Yes, we did have a lot of orange juice. Yes, my mom would cut oranges. We had a bittersweet. For those who don't know what a bittersweet, it looked like an orange, but it tastes like a lemon. Some kind of way, I don't know how it came out that way, but that's what she used to make lemonade out of. And it looked just like an orange. Then my grandfather, with the wisdom of growing up in the country, he took a tangerine branch, cut a couple of holes in this bittersweet, and he called graft, put the tangerine limb in the tree, and maybe about 2 or 3 years of harvesting, that bittersweet became sweet, like an orange. Tangerine in it, but we were eating it like it was oranges. So the point I'm raising, we've been in this business a long time, and that's just adapting to what we've been. They, again, like old folks said, you gave us lemons and we made lemonade. Okay? You gave us this and we made that. And that was very, very important to us down there. They used to base with it with different meats and everything, but I've always have known that how important oranges were to us and to the world, because the world headquarters for oranges in Florida is in Bradenton, Florida, the Tropicana. And Eugene could attest, too. It helped you play baseball, too, because when they were green, they were hard. And I know I got hit by a few. See those oranges? I've thrown plenty of them. And you didn't know what was going on. We were just having fun as kids. But as you're saying, that particular fruit is very important, essential. You know, we look at vitamin C as keeping us, our body armor up to prevent us from catching colds and things of that nature. So, Dr. Rodriguez, we thank you as always. I look forward to things, you know, I think about all the other stuff. Folks, she gave you some things about skin, getting it right. But the thing is, these are additives, but we still want you to go to your physician. By no rights are we certified to tell you we're just adding spice to your life. But you still go to your doctor, because I don't want you to say, well, Andrew told us not to take the medicine. No. You won't hear it from my mouth. This will goes along with what you have. So I'm excited. And Dr. Rodriguez?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I know you're the queen. You're the queen of music. Now, that I do know. And we just thank you as always. I want to add, I know we always get you for your medical expertise. I want to throw this out to you a little bit. How does this, with the affirmative action, what did you think about it when it was reversed?
Well, I said, wow. Because I'm just still discombobulated.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This kind of threw you off that we can go back. Well, you know, I always said if I was a watchmaker, I would make a watch that runs backwards. Because it seemed like the hands of time are reversing in everything that we've done. With Juneteenth, I got an opportunity to be a keynote speaker on that, and I gave some of my perspectives of what Juneteenth. I always tell people when I moved out here, I had no clue what it was. I thought it was just a new way of saying anything in the 10th, 13th, 14th, 15th, all the way to 19th. I had no clue. But then just learning what it was all about, or getting the word late to Texas. Can you imagine, Eugene talked about Robert E. Lee and generals like that, where the Confederacy was trying to prevent the world, or should I say the world being Texas, of knowing that they were free. People fail to realize that Texas is the number one producer in cotton. Not Alabama, not Georgia, not Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana. It's Texas, the number one producer of cotton. So if we can get another year out of folks to pick some cotton for us, that's what we'll do. We'll create a barrier where Granger can't go straight, because Granger had to go through a lot of this big estates in the South. He had to go to Louisiana to get here, up those roads, Oklahoma, Arkansas. All those ways were blocked. Granger had to go all the way. Have you ever asked yourself, why did he have to go to the shores of Galveston? Because he could not get through to the other, through the other ways, a means of getting to Texas. So he had to go by boat. And then he gets on the shores and declare that they are free on June 19, 1865. So, you know, we hear things, but folks, investigate. You know, we have the cognitive power together. We're smart people, always have been. History may not support that. You know, I go back, you think Ben Franklin was out there flying a kite with a key on it? Come on, y'all. You know, he had a brother out there in the storm. He out there looking to see if the brother going to get shot. Y'all know how I go. you know exactly how it goes. You think electricity and light bulbs, plenty of brothers got shot trying to hold a light bulb for Mr. Edison. Telephone, all of it. Who do you think put the straight first line from house to house? It wasn't Thomas Edison. So realize I may make a little fun of it, but I'm a realist when it comes to that. We understand that we built this country. We went west when they didn't want to go west. We were the first to fall in the Mississippi River. When they said, oh, we can't go that way, I don't see them no more. They wanted to see what was where the sun was setting, where we went all the way over to California, not knowing what was in front of us. All we had nature's compass, knowing that the sun come up in the east and go down in the west, and that's all they did, followed the sun.
Andrew.
Yes, sir.
I said we were already here. There was a lot of us already here. Malcolm X said, only a fool will let his open enemy educate his kids. We always get their narrative on everything, and we never hear our narrative. But less than 500,000 slaves made it to the United States. Not all of us are transatlantic slave descendants. We're not. We were already here. We were enslaved. They played a game of skins. We were already in California. If you read the Christopher Columbus papers, he would tell you who he encountered. Encountered people are like me and you, melanated skin, copper tone, woolly hair. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said, okay? And because we were already here. So they come up with all these narratives, brainwashing.
And but that's the name of the game. Name of the game. You know, and since I have both of you on, we look at, you know, Coach Prime catching a lot of hair. And first of all, I pray that he has a recovery with what's going on with his blood clots. You know, and some people wishing ill fate because of what he's doing for college football, changing the narrative. But how many times have we mastered something and not get credit for it? I guess, Gene, that's probably piggybacking on what you're mentioning. All the inventions
right.
that they have done that others have gotten the praise for it, or they've gotten the credit. And let me go back to prime time, okay? He know how to play the game. He's played the game. You build what you're doing. Some people at Jackson State very upset with him. But wouldn't you leave your job for a better paying job?
I'll just put it like that. Not necessarily. I mean, he got millions of dollars, but if you already got money, you're comfortable, when is enough is enough. I mean, I'm not against Coach Prime. I'm not against him at all, anything like that. But sometimes people who come from PWI land, they think like PWI people. I mean, he comes from PWI land. You don't come from HBCU land. HBCU land is rough. A lot of work to do. You ever do business with Jackson State, you probably understand why he left, because it ain't easy, just like it ain't with most HBCUs.
We understand. We understand.
I'm on both sides of the fence. Support him.
But that's what he was saying, that they promised him stuff, and they wasn't delivering. You have 70,000 people in the stands, and you offer him $5,000. That ain't, come on. At $20, $30 a seat, some more than that, 70,000 people. You know, you're just going to get a good little share.
But it's a little more intricate than that. With the way that JSU do their football games, even though they got the name on the stadium, it's not owned by them. And they don't really control the revenue from their stadium. They'll do a football game in September and won't get money until May or June, and never came right like it left. So there's some things there. And then when I heard him speaking about that, he's smart, he's intelligent, but there are specific things that you need to know when you're talking about producing events and how you count tickets and all of those things. Anybody can look in the stand and make assumptions, but Jackson State has
usually the number one attendance in all the FCS, whether you PWI or not, and they usually average about 25,000 to 30,000 people anyway. But there's a lot that goes into that number. So when I will hear him say, make those statements, number one, I know it's not easy dealing with Jackson State. I know they don't control their revenue for their football game. The state of Mississippi, the Department of Revenue do. And
right.
it's hard to look up in that stand and say how many people are here if you don't know what we call a drop count is or any of those numbers that actually tell you what the gross attendance is and what the net attendance is, meaning net who actually paid. So they got some bridges to cross, and I think there's a way he could have dealt with it. But he's going to Colorado. I support him. I hope he does well. But that school has less than 2% black folk. 2%.
Yeah, but they're getting the other 2% in now. They got more kids interested. I know the culture is going to change. A lot of the kids, we're going to Colorado. You know, we don't do well in snow, not all that big snow.
Right.
I've talked
right,
to the men
right.
and women who have been in the service that have gone over to Germany and played. They said, man, that was too cold. I couldn't wait to get back.
Right. Well, you got to put them layers on. It was cold when I moved to Chicago, coming straight from Florida. I had to learn how to layer up, and I enjoyed it. But I don't know. I just think we need – we get exceptional people like him is try to find a way to keep him. But, again, you got different kind of people. People who go through the HBCU system understand it and more advocate for it. People who have lived a professional life of privilege who go to HBCU land, most of them have a difficult time because – they got the resources on the other side of the fence. They have people doing specific things. And when you come to HBCU land, you got to do about 100 things.
Yeah. A lot of the professors had to come out of their pockets on certain things, certain items.
Sure.
To make sure that you got the whole picture or the right picture. I'll never forget Rudy Daniels was my economics teacher. And I understood he had a fat tie on. We were going through the phase of the skinny ties.
That's
and
right.
And he said, my tie wearing is like life. It's here today, gone tomorrow, but it'll be back the next day.
But
and
we're
looking at him like, what the heck is he talking about? He said, at this tie, but it's back. And now we're in the fat tie era.
Well, when he was wearing it, that was the 80s. That tie came from the 70s, so I remember that very vividly.
I remember him,
his wardrobe being like it was about 10 or 15 years behind, but he was a brilliant, brilliant man. But here's the difference, right? My friends who've gone to PWI, University of Illinois, Auburn, you just name any one of them. The biggest difference is we still have relationships with Dr. Daniels, Dr. Rivers, Dr. Oliver, Dr. James, we still have relationships with our professors and doctors. To this day, I was on a call last week. We're getting ready, Dr. James, who's marching 100. Well, he's been at FAMU 60 years. So we're planning an event for him for next year. I have a relationship with this man. And I met him when I was 16. And I'm not the only one. And that's the difference. I mean, HBCU have their challenges. Don't get me wrong. Pretty much all of them do. But when I look at my friends who did not have that experience, they don't look at their universities the same way, unless you're an exception. They don't look at it the same way. We maintain our relationships with the president, with the professors, with people who came through school with us. We have more intimate relationships, fraternity brothers or what have you. And from what I realize, they do have it amongst them being black folk, but most of them don't have relationships with the same way we do. I can call Dr. James up. I can call other professors that, you know, up and say, hey, well, I'm coming through Tallahassee. I want to say hello to you. I can call Joe Bullock. Call any of them up. And that's the biggest difference. That's why we have that love. But
Dion, he's an accepting individual. I wish him well, but I wish he would have worked it out with Jackson State because he was doing some great things, and you're going to have challenges, and he was raising the profile in so many ways, and I think that was great. And I don't know if we're going to have another voice like that who can be so impactful, who can be as impactful as he was, not just to Jackson State, but to all the football playing HBCUs. Now he's gone, and he's over at University of Colorado, and they're going to get that big pot of money and to do what they want to do with it.
People want to see him fail. So they're going to come in.
I don't
want to
see him fail.
No, I don't. I don't either. But what he's showing us is that we know we've always been capable. If we could go in.
But why do we have to prove anything to them anyway? Why can't we justify our own existence, just like the Negro League, just like all of our institutions? Why do we have to prove anything to them?
Can't
we build our own institution?
We shouldn't have to prove, but deep down inside, everybody that has this tan that I have, we know we're capable of what we're capable of doing. And if nothing else, if we don't prove it to them, we're going to prove it to ourselves and glorify our folks because we ride or die. We want them to be successful. And then back in your hip pocket, you got, I told you we can do it. Because they want them to fail.
But can you imagine
it's
Jewish
cat? It's funny how USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. They'd rather travel across the country than play in that pack.
Right,
they stuck with what's left.
But can you imagine a Jewish guy or Indian guy abandoning his own institution to go on the other side? It don't really happen because they understand the importance of that, building their own institutions, creating that economics, recycling in their community, and building their own brand. We jump ship. Let's go play in the Major League Baseball. Let's go play University of Colorado. Think of what an impact he could have made if he could have got things done and created a super league like we've been hearing about for so long, FBS level, HBCU schools, what that could do. And it takes work, but to me, that's the more valiant fight. That's the more valiant fight because all of his ingenuity, all of his money and resources and all the things that he's going to do is going to be for the benefit of them. Okay? And we could do the same for ourselves. We got 50 million black folk, unquote, here, and I believe it's more than that. If we created our own institutions, I mean, we got it. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
But we jump ship for the individual thing, for the money thing. We jump ship for the access and privilege. Well, my thought
right,
is,
but he,
and this is
now
just
he
me.
Did mention that the, you were talking about gate receipts and things that you're trying to get money from a stadium that's not even owned by the school. He was saying, he was seeing the money, but the money never got to him that they were promising.
Well, Jackson
so
State don't get the money until the next year. Jackson State don't get the money. This is the only place I know. When we do events, the day I do the event, I know where I'm at. I'll get what we call a partial settlement at the event. My goal is to close all the books within a week. Jackson State, they know what the sales are, but they don't get a check until the next year. I'm talking like May, June. I know because the president asked me to help him. May or June of the next year. How can you keep your books like that? How can you keep your books? And when it goes, they get hit with all of these fees and all of this and all of that, and they end up saying the same thing. I know we made more money than this. So if you can't get it right yourself, how are you going to get it right for him? That's what they're dealing with. They need help. Most of these HBCUs, when it comes to these classics, when it comes to a lot of these events, unfortunately, we don't have the expertise. Just because we got a doctor and their doctor this and they have oversight of the stadium or the business records, a lot of times they don't have experience beyond academia. They don't have that experience a lot of times, and we don't have the expertise. We have it, but they're not at the school. That's how come we look at
We look at the facilities at FAMU and most places. They're not at a high level, and we constantly see every week this university getting a new stadium, SMU getting a $50 million upgrade. And you can just go down. Baylor got a new stadium a couple years ago because we just don't have experts in the realm of business at HBCUs.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not there. You know, it's just not there. And we have so much economic strength in the way that we have light folk that have means that can, even if we don't always have to have that $1 million, $5 million donor, but there are plenty alumni mm-hmm. and black folk that still like black stuff. So I'm wishing Dion the best, but I really wish he would have stayed in some capacity in HBCU world to help us go to that next level, to where we can compete with a University of Colorado or Auburn or Alabama, where all our black boys are going, giving their sources, they're giving their resources, their talent, and then when they're gone, they make the NFL, they become alumni, they get that big pot of money to them, a school with less than 2%, 2% black, less than 2% black. And they're going to be financing, ski hockey. They're going to be financing, Olympic breakdancing. They're going to finance a whole bunch of stuff that ain't got nothing to do with football, nothing to do with the black community. So it takes a wake-up call.
And all that.
Yeah, you go get Deion Sanders, and he's like, oh, we only got less than 2% black folk. We need to get some more black folk. It's 2022, 2023. We have got to start valuing our institutions, and all those brothers and sisters that went to PWI land, y'all need to come on back home, community, so we can elevate together.
You know what? We've found out over the years, you know, we know, as my grandparents, we know what side our bread is buttered, truly. But, you know, if one failed, we all failed. We all in this thing together, and people don't realize that. You may have gone to school XYZ, or you got this beautiful job, but there are even limitations to those jobs as well.
You can't pass the job on. You can't pass on a job. That's individual wealth. You can't pass that on. You got to own something. You got to own more than a house. You need to own. But you look at these Indians. They just killing it in Atlanta.
Oh.
Because they own
everywhere.
Stuff. They own all these convenience stores. Yeah. You can pass that along, but you can't pass the manager of a convenience store along. You can't pass a job to your descendants. You can't, but you can pass on a business and the wealth that comes from that. You know, that's what you can pass that on. You know, so I'm, again, with Dion, I don't really want to see a lot of black folk go to PWI land. Come on back to the Negro League. Make the Negro League strong in all of its forms. That's what we need. Make that Negro League strong. We shouldn't have to go to Kansas City to the Negro League Museum and say, this is what it was, and go down the street and see Satchel Paige House, who had a jet plane and a beautiful mansion and all the rest of them, or go see that YMCA where they started. You need to go meet that brother Ollie Gates, who owns Gates Ribs, got about 6 to 10 stores, and replicate what he do like a Whopper's doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, Hawatha, a bad dude. People don't realize. Right here in Texas, Williams Chicken, a black millionaire. Learn from churches and did his thing. And that's what we should do. We should learn the craft. And then once we learn the craft and we perfect it or add things to it to make it even better, put your own twist.
And let me ask you this. What benefit is Deion Sanders at the University of Colorado? What benefit is that? What does that mean? What is it?
Well, for them, I think whether you look at it positively or negatively, they know people will come to see him fail. They want him to fail.
I think they want him to win. They make more money if he wins. Yeah, mm-hmm. They ain't paying no television rights if he loses. They make millions if they want him to win.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want, because they make millions. The gate money is good. But when you're at that level, you make millions and millions and millions off of television
mm-hmm.
rights. You know, but what does it mean to us as black folk? Is this Jackie Robinson all over again. You know, so he's a black coach at an FBS level school. So what that mean? They need to go get more black folk to coach black kids. You know, what does it mean? What benefit is it to us other than his individual choice?
Yes.
What does it mean for us? We got to convince more white folk that we can be a black head coach at their institution.
Mm-hmm.
What benefit is it for him being there other than an individual choice? What benefit is it?
Well, I'm going to continue to support. I mean, I know him.
I'm going to support him. I knew Carolyn, his first wife. I mean, I'm going to watch the game. I want to see him win, but if I had to be honest, what benefit is it? This ain't 1947.
Mm-hmm.
What is the benefit of him being there other than individual choice?
All right. Well, yeah, I'm trying to get some things going. I know Cheryl's calling, and we're trying to get her in. I don't know if we've had some issues with Wi-Fi over here, but we're going to get her back on. I know you probably said something that got her going, Jean, and I got to get her on.
Right, get on.
I don't know, yeah. This morning, folks, for those who are listening, welcome to the World According to Drew. I'm Andrew Wiggum, live from Studio A. This morning, Eugene Gilbert and Dr. Rodriguez have been our guests this morning, and we're trying to get them on. I tell you, it's been challenging this morning, trying to get this mobile hotspot going and got my other things going on. So give me a second. I'll continue to talk, but we're trying to get this internet stuff going on, which has been quite challenging this morning. I don't know if it's because it's been raining out here that we would not have the internet going for us, but I did tie in our thing. Let's get this other internet going here. I tell you, Gene, technology is something else. When you think you got it, something else jump in, and that's what I'm trying to do, get back into the show on that part of it. Yeah, hey, I do it all.
Okay.
And, yes, that's what it was. Absolutely. Hold on one second. Cheryl, here we come. And I apologize. I had to restart everything. All right, you're hot, Miss Cheryl Smith. Good morning. Welcome to the World According to Drew.
Good morning. I'm not really hot, but that's okay. And good morning to your guests. I think one thing that I really wanted to know, I came in midstream, so I needed to know who was talking and needed to have some, that's a journalist in me, before you comment, or that's the fighter in me, know who you fight and know who you teaming up with as well. And the conversation was so strong, I just think people should know who's talking, and it's like sourcing. And
right.
A lot of things were discussed, and as I think about someone who was shaking my head and kind of begging this black person who was black power, black power, black power, but I was saying, let's go eat, and I couldn't get this person to go to a black-owned business. And so as someone who lives black, we have so many challenges, and we have so many challenges with the institution. And I heard your guests, and sometimes I didn't know if it was two or three males on or the same one talking, but I know, yes, Jackson State does have a lot of issues, and they're going to keep having issues. It's just like all the other HBCUs, but there are a lot of things that other institutions can do that historically black colleges need to stop doing, and it's, you need to stop hiring your buddies when your buddies aren't qualified.
Exactly.
And you need to stop, you know, rewarding incompetence, because that's what happens when people go places and they say, what the heck are y'all doing here? And then someone comes in here. One positive thing that I can say about Deion Sanders stepping on Jackson State's campus is he made other institutions elevate their game. And Jackson State has, you know, they're taking their time with, your guest mentioned having a conversation, or conversations with the president of Jackson State. Thank God that president is no longer there. But Jackson State taking an inordinate amount of time that I really do think if Elaine Anthony was Eric Anthony, they would have made a decision already. But their last two hires as president of Jackson State University hurt this university and its brand. But, you know, this is something, you know, in us that we have to find a way to uplift and to do a serious analysis of things going on without tearing down, because we get torn down so much. Someone asked me in an interview before if I fell in love, because I said something about LeBron, being Team LeBron, and they said, did I fall in love with him after I think he won a championship or something like that? I said, no, I fell in love with him when he told folks that he was free. And because I've seen people work, black people, 25 and 35 years, and more than that. And when the boss, the owner says, I'm ready for you to go, they kicked him out the door with no ceremony whatsoever, no pen, no watch, no nothing. And nobody says anything. We say that's their business and they can do what they want to. But when we walk away from opportunities, and I really have to believe, and Dick Gregory taught me this, if somebody says it's one, I guarantee you there's a two, three, and four, and there are some things we don't know. And there has been a serious problem with coaches at HBCUs, especially when their name and profile is higher than the president. And that's you can go around the country and look at the near some, and not just coaches, but even journalism schools and other places, because sometimes the president wants to be it. And Andrew, you know, I told you when I was at FAMU, and I'm probably older than all of you, I don't know because I don't know who's on the call, but I didn't know who the president of Florida State University was, but I knew Bobby Bowden was. And that's because the president had his place and did what he needed to do, and Bobby Bowden did what he needed to do. So I wish I had gotten on earlier, but I know Andrew is there for a reason. He loves to talk, and we let him talk. And so I just want to thank whoever the guest is.
Eugene Gilbert.
Eugene Gilbert. But I want to make a comment right quick. Some of you rattlers might get mad, but Jackson State turns over president like FAMU turn over athletic directors. And it's a
destabilizing
process.
They're not
going to
turn over this athletic director. I hope not.
I've been hearing some wins, though. I hope not, Cheryl, but I have been.
It's about more than wins because she is.
No, no, I don't mean that. I mean wins of change. Wins of change. I heard.
Oh, okay.
And she ain't even been there a year, and I think it's sad. She can't. She needs some experts. They don't have no experts. They don't have no experts. They don't have experts. Too much FAMUism, hiring your fraternity brother, your fraternity sister.
Oh, God,
sister.
Yes.
But that's
prevalent. Experts.
Right. But Cheryl opened up by saying, you know, you have to get people who are experts in the field. That nepotism is what's killing our HBCUs as a whole, because we can look, let's look at FAMU. I won't call names, but when you have the daddy over the department and then the son comes in, and then his kids work at the school. There's not business as usual. And or mama was a high figure, and then the daughter, and then the son and daughter. you know, things of that nature. We got to change.
Well, not only that, Andrew, not only that, you got to, at FAMU, you got a certain fraternity that runs FAMU, and they're going to get mad at me and start throwing rocks if I mention who they are. But there's a fraternity that runs FAMU. There's a fraternity that runs FAMU. Say what now?
You know, I say if you can back it up, and I do understand, and I do not have a problem with people who are being, who are qualified, but we have people sitting on boards who are getting recognition. Don't bring a dollar into the university.
Damn.
It's just flaunt at homecoming, at events and everything, and their buddies getting recognized and getting, you know, honors, and it's not just at ours, and because I've heard, I love visiting HBCUs. I was at Jackson State for a few days back in April and spent time with the president, and I hope to see her again in Labor Day weekend and everything. But I love visiting and talking to the president and having conversations about how do you get better, how do you bring changes in, and it is the stop. You know, you have people who go to a school, get their bachelor's degree there, get their master's degree there, and if they go higher, they may go to a school around there, and they stay at that school. They never go out and see the world and see that it can be bigger and better, because that's
right.
All they know. But they keep rolling over in departments at that university.
And most of them, most presidents of HBCUs, liberal arts degrees, not lawyers, not business people, liberal arts. And they come up through academia, and then we expect them to make business decisions. And,
right,
and they just
right.
don't have it. And that's the problem. When you look at athletics, and I hope this AD Sykes, I hope she survives. I hope she thrives. I want to see her do well. I do. I have that hope for her, because turnover has been incredible at FAMU when it comes to ADs. It really has been incredible. But it's the same problem. They can address the administration of athletics, but where they all fail is at the business of athletics. All of them fail at the business of athletics. That's come you don't see our stadiums with naming rights, corporations and all of those things, all those high areas when it comes to advertising dollars and sponsorship dollars. Why we don't have those things? Because they fail at the business of athletics. They'll go hire somebody because she's smart, come to find out she's of a certain sorority, or he's of a certain fraternity, or their mama, their daddy, they went to a certain high school, but it doesn't speak to their business acumen. And that's the problem. You got people who are HBCU alumni in the business world at these different corporations, agencies, who've been out in the trenches with media that understand how these advertising dollars work and cue, reach, and frequency and all the things they look for. But they're not at the HBCU. And if you could try to engage them in it, they fight for their job. They fight for their job, and they're going to tell you, hey, you're not a part of this no more. Yeah, you're a rattler, but no, we got this. And they don't have
folks, I hate to be the spoiler, but we run out of time. This is – do we – I ask that we pick this up next Sunday. This is interesting. I have a lot of people, and I apologize for those who were trying to get in, but we're going to do it the same bat time, same bat channel. I want to thank Eugene Gilbert out of Atlanta. I want to thank Cheryl Smith, as always, out of Dallas here. And we want you to be a part of the world according to Drew. Same bat time, same bat channel. Next week, Dr. Rodriguez, thank you, as always, for that nugget that you always provide us with. So, folks, tune in next week. We'll do the same thing as always. Give your family a hug. Wealth is everything. And you know what? Well, I got two rattlers on the phone and some that wish they was rattlers that was trying to get in. But one thing I can say, I'm so glad I'm from FAMU. I'm out.
Here you go. Thank you.
Thank you.